This podcast is brought to you by AJ Products, made in Sweden for the rest of the world. Visit ajproducts.ie to see how we can make your workplace work for you.
When the funeral of a significant criminal figure takes place, the service can be an extravagant affair.
The kind of displays that you will see are friends of theirs outside on scrambler bikes, revving the back wheels and smoke in the air everywhere. You will have things like very elaborate floral tributes in the shape of like the person's favourite vodka or maybe a Rolex watch.
The gangland funeral subculture has become more exaggerated over the years, and it isn't always about just flaunting wealth.
It's really important to them to give their friend a big send-off and to show themselves as a strong group, even though somebody within that group has been killed.
But among the mourners and onlookers, there will be Gardaí and covert surveillance crews.
They will be sitting in a car and they will be taking down the registration plate of every vehicle that passes. They'll be taking notes of who's there, who's with who, and an intelligence picture can then begin to build up.
This is in the news from the Irish Times. I'm Bernice Harrison. Today, I speak to security and crime editor Conor Lally about what he has learned from attending gangland funerals. Conor, last week you went to a funeral in a church in inner city Dublin. It was the funeral of Tony Filoni. Who was he?
Well, Tony Filoni, I suppose, was a notorious heroin dealer going back some years now. I suppose younger people would never have heard of him. But back in the 1980s up until the mid-90s, Tony Filoni would have been very active on the drug dealing scene here in Dublin, particularly for dealing heroin. He was from the north inner city, Dominic Street, and he really didn't stray too far from there. Unlike other criminals who, I suppose, they make a few quid and then they buy a house in the hills or a house down the country, he didn't do that. He stayed in that area. And as one of the guards told me during the week after Tony Filoni died, like it was kind of unusual in the sense that he would open his door and he would literally see the parents of the kids who died on his drugs the previous week. He was notorious for the fact that he got some of his children involved in his heroin dealing gang and they also got hooked on drugs. And he was actually a heroin user himself. And when he died, he was HIV positive from drug use. So a notorious figure in the history of Irish organised crime.
And when you say unusual, another unusual aspect of him is that he was 81 when he died. Gangland figures don't tend to live that long. So what was his funeral like?
His funeral was very small, and it was very short. There was no death notice or funeral arrangements on RIP.ie or anywhere else. You had to find out through contacts where it was on. There was about 20 mourners at the funeral. There was no eulogy. And the funeral was all over in less than 20 minutes.
Was there any hint that this was a gangland figure?
There wasn't really. One particular song was played at the very end. Tony Filoni was the son of an Italian immigrant, and I suppose he was a godfather of crime here in Ireland. And the theme from The Godfather was played as his remains were brought out of the church. So that was a bit surprising. But look, maybe it was his favourite song.
So that was a sort of a very low-key, very quiet, very small funeral. But that's not what we've been seeing from other people involved in gangland who have died. Is there a culture around gangland funerals now?
I mean, the answer to that question is yes. He was kind of out of organised crime for well over 20 years. He was also a much older man. And a lot of these other funerals that we go to, they're younger people who've been shot dead a week or two earlier. So grief is in the air. Anger is in the air. Very often there's gangland tensions around the person's killing. There are fears that there may be trouble even at the funeral or that there will be more feuding because the person has been killed. So they're generally highly charged events. A lot of them would have, I suppose, a covert and an overt guard of presence at them. And then we see displays at the funerals, which can vary. For some of the younger men who are killed on the lower, you know, rungs of organised crime, the kind of displays that you will see are, you know, friends of theirs outside on scrambler bikes, revving the back wheels of the bikes, and there's smoke in the air everywhere. You might see a few horses outside and ponies and traps, that kind of thing. And I suppose what that is really, it's a display of, it's a group dynamic. This is the group that our friend was involved in. This is what we do. We ride around on scramblers. We love caring for horses and, you know, racing horses up and down the road. And they will put on that show as a big kind of send-off to their...
It's also a show of money, isn't it?
So it's a flaunting of their position in the local area through their drug dealing, that they can afford to buy these things. They can afford to go and wreck two tyres on a motorbike just for the hell of it. But I think more so, it's really important to them to give their friend a big send-off and to show themselves as a strong group, even though somebody within that group has been killed, and they want to make an impact. And then some of it is just because some of these people are, I suppose, involved in crime and they're a bit on the wild side, and this is the way they go on. You will have things like very elaborate floral tributes, you know, in the shape of like the person's favourite vodka, you know, whiskey, or maybe a Rolex watch, Louis Vuitton logos, you know, Hugo Boss logos, all of that kind of thing. So I suppose what's happened really is that bling culture has really taken off and really spread and become globalised, I would say, with the spread of social media over the last 10 to 15 years. And I think a lot of these, particularly the younger generation of people involved in crime, when I say younger generation, anybody up to the age of about 30, I think they've grown up on social media. And because of that, they've ready access to, you know, US culture in particular. And I think they borrow a lot of the trappings for the funerals from rap culture in America. That's my theory anyway. And I think that's what the motorbikes outside the churches are all about. That's what the floral tributes are all about. And then one more recent thing, I suppose, is that a lot of the undertakers now are offering this service that they will record the funeral. They will have a fairly extensive camera crew on site with the kind of equipment that you would see, like, maybe RTE cameramen at an Ireland game.
So an elaborate setup.
Like things like, you know, quite large and heavy cameras, which would be set up on them by an apparatus like across their chest or around their waist, you know, so they can carry this around maybe for an hour and get various angles and keep the camera still. And they will have drones as well filming. So you get this, you get the scrambler bikes being revved outside with all the smoke in the air. You'll get the horses outside and the hearses arriving.
What happens to those videos though, Conor?
Well, those videos are essentially, all the footage is shot, the videos are edited, and maybe a 10 or 20 minute video is compiled and it's shared on social media. And if you go onto social media, you will see them. And some of them are like, okay, you could say that it was intended to be a celebration of the person's life. It looks more like a party or a rave almost than a funeral. But this, again, this is what some of these people seem to want. They want a particular atmosphere and a particular culture celebrated at the funeral of their loved ones, and then they want it recorded so they can have a memento, basically. I hadn't seen that until about 5 or 6 years ago.
So, Conor, outside a church, it would be obvious to passers-by that this was a funeral of somebody involved in the criminal fraternity. Inside, would there be any signs?
I mean, mostly no. Obviously, at times, some of the people in attendance would be other senior criminal figures, and you would know who they were, and everybody would, and I suppose that would be the sign. But in other cases, no. Often, the funeral services just unfold as any funeral service would, but there are exceptions. People will remember in 2021, three young men from the Tala area were killed on the N7. They were driving up the wrong way up the N7. They crashed into a truck and their car burst into flames. So they were killed on the spot, basically. And at one of their funerals, a man called Dean Maguire, I suppose the scenes were very strange.
You know the details at this stage. The torch and a screwdriver is one of the offerings for someone who was a burglar. A banner, professional banner, unfurled on the altar behind us, in front of the station to the cross, basically said, "Rest in peace, Dean. You know the score. Get on the floor. Give me the money. Don't be funny," which apparently was his call sign. And then the display inside and outside the church, including the hearse travelling from the Liberties on Wednesday night through red lights with the coffin. It's an American style coffin, which is the family's decision, up to the house for a wake.
Some of the tributes, if you could call them that, paid to him at his funeral were very much intended to show that he was part of a group that were heavily involved in crime and seemed to love being involved in it, and this was part of their life, and they were, I don't know whether they were proud of it or this was just the group activity that they all engaged in, and they wanted to mark that during the funeral. So that was a pretty notorious one. But I suppose the most significant funeral we've had in recent times, for all kinds of reasons, is the funeral of David Byrne.
And who is David Byrne?
So David Byrne is a 34-year-old father of two from Crumlin who was shot dead in the Regency Hotel by the Hutch Gang in February 2016. And his brother is a man called Liam Byrne, and he headed up the Byrne Organised Crime Group here in Ireland. And the Byrne Organised Crime Group essentially ran the Kinahan's Irish drugs empire. David Byrne's funeral was held, and it went to the church on Francis Street in the south inner city. I was there that day. And while we've had, say, shows of strength at funerals, this was your real flaunted in your face.
The cortege arrived at around 12:30. It was led by a lone piper. There was about 10 stretch limousines following it. Then the coffin, David Byrne's coffin, was carried into the church by a number of men in dark suits, all wearing blue shirts and sunglasses. There were also a number of...
There was a paramilitary sense-off on the day, I thought, because that they're the only other funerals that you would, you know, you'd see people wearing the same clothes. And even watching it, I thought it was a big mistake on their part, because I thought this is going to provoke a lot of comment. If you look at who some of those men were, that's the interesting thing. Daniel Kinahan was there. Christopher Kinahan Jr. was there. Obviously, Liam Byrne was there. A guy called Thomas Bomber Kavanagh was there. He ran the Kinahan's UK operation. He was David Byrne's brother-in-law. Freddie Thompson was there, who ran the Byrne Group before it became the Byrne Group under the leadership of Liam Byrne. Even the coffin David Byrne was buried in prompted a lot of criticism and commentary in the media. It was one of these US-style caskets, and there was a lot of speculation that it cost, you know, 15,000 euros and so on. There was remote-controlled cars, quite expensive when you used to bring up, you know, the offertory gifts inside the church and so on. So the trappings of this funeral got up people's noses very, very much so. And you know what? Even the fact that members of the public were stopped for lengthy periods in their car outside that church so these people could file in and out, that created a lot of comment at the time. And people said, look, this has just gone too far. These are marching in the streets, showing off their wealth, showing off the fact that they're a gang. This has to stop.
I suppose for all that, though, these funerals tend to happen in Catholic churches, very much, you know, parish churches in the communities where the deceased lived. And I suppose when you see families assembled outside and maybe hear parts of the priest's eulogy, you can't help but be aware that, you know, these are grieving families. It's some other son or child's father, and that the lives could have gone in a very different direction, but they were cut short. Do you get a sense of that?
You definitely do. Like, people will ask me, well, why do you go to these funerals? You know, why would you go to, you know, the funeral of somebody who's been killed in a gangland attack? And I suppose the answer is, when you do the job that we do in the media, you can sometimes, you can forget that these are real people you're writing about. Like, these are not cartoon characters with nicknames that have been assigned to them by sections of the media. They are real people, and they have parents, and a lot of them have, you know, girlfriends and wives, kids very often. You know, these are grieving families at the end of the day. Even though the person who's dead may have been very heavily involved in organised crime, their death still has the same impact on the people around them that any of our passings would for our family and friends. And I think, as a crime journalist covering these things, I think it's really important to go to funerals and see the grief, and I suppose the human toll that gangland crime, particularly gun culture, has on people. And very often you see, while you may have thought this person was very wealthy or, you know, was earning a lot of money from their drug dealing, at some of the funerals you can see the circumstances of the people around this man, and it's always a man, are generally quite poor. And I think that's valuable information.
Well, speaking of valuable information, you know, you've seen movies where police attend the funeral of a criminal, and you know, they're in the cemetery standing behind the trees, and they're there to get information to see who's there. Does that happen here?
It does happen here. The only time I've seen police graves, Gardaí graveside, is at paramilitary funerals, and they will take up a position around a grave, literally an open grave, before the coffin arrives to ensure that there won't be any shots fired over the grave. It's like they're taking the territory so people who have firearms and balaclavas can't. I suppose in funerals of people who have been involved in organised crime and, you know, have been shot dead, the policing presence is twofold. when somebody has been shot dead, particularly if they belong to a crime that are a gang that's very active in organised crime, maybe part of an ongoing feud, and indeed that person's killing was part of that feud, there can often be a concern that trouble will flare at or around the funeral. Now, it very rarely happens, if ever, like really. So a Garda presence will be there. This will be things like, you know, marked Garda cars, Garda vans, Garda in uniform on foot in and around the car park.
And does that cause tension then with the families?
Well, they try and pass that bit of it off as a kind of a traffic management operation, helping the cortege in and out of the church and keeping traffic flowing. And that generally does work.
So whatever about the security element, have they ever got any useful intelligence from going to a funeral?
Yes, they have. So the second strand of the policing operation will be covert. So these will be plainclothes Gardaí sitting in unmarked cars. And often, you will spot them, like I've spotted them several times. They will be sitting in a car and they will be taking down the registration plate of every vehicle that passes. They'll be taking notes of who's there, who's with who. Sometimes they'll be taking photographs, the National Surveillance Unit. Now, if the NSU is there taking pictures, you won't see them because they'll be well hidden away. But the plainclothes guards, you will literally see them with a pen on the pad taking down all the car regs and just trying to soak up, okay, who's here, who isn't here, who's with who. And the reason for that is they may be carrying out a major investigation into a particular crime gang. And any soft intelligence that they can get, they want it. And funerals are a real occasion where they can get a lot of that. Maybe cars that are registered in, you know, Northern Ireland, Limerick or some other part of the country, and you begin picking away at that and you realise, OK, this particular group is obviously in contact with or is friends of a group in the north, wherever. And an intelligence picture can then begin to build up and you can get information just by being present at the funeral that you didn't have beforehand.
And would they be hoping that, you know, criminals would come home from abroad for a funeral?
Well, they would be hoping criminals...
And has that happened?
...would come home from abroad from a funeral. I mean, generally, if criminals are on the run, so if they're wanted here, if there's charges outstanding or they've escaped from some open centre, some, you know, jail here, they generally won't come home. I mean, I'm not aware of any prisoner coming home for a funeral and being pounced on at the funeral. However, Christy Kinahan was caught because he came home for his father's funeral. That was back in the 1990s. But I would say the Byrne funeral really, the intelligence then gleaned from that funeral for people like on Garda Síochána obviously was really interesting. And if you look at one particular person who was there, a man called Declan Brady, I'd say now he was the most interesting character at the funeral, but I don't think anybody knew who he was on the day. So he would have been unknown at the time. But in the background, he was part of the cartel. He was managing an effectively a commercial unit that was used to store their guns and clean the farm.
Is this the guy sometimes called Mr. Nobody?
That's him. So he had an address in Woolston Abbey in Selbridge in County Kildare. And he had been spotted by the guards before in the company of some of these people, but wasn't on the Garda radar in any big way. But he was at the centre of this particular group.
At the funeral.
Mm. And obviously the guards were saying, OK, who is this guy and why is he here? And when they began to pick away at him, they realised that he was a very important character, really. Now, he was caught running a commercial outfit in Rathcoole, a commercial premises made to look like a proper business, but it was all fake. You know, they'd fake like ring binders and secretary and reception and all of this, and it was total nonsense. It was empty. And it was being used to stash the Kinahan's guns and their cash. And Declan Brady has since been convicted of money laundering, firearms offences, and he has pleaded guilty to aiding the killing of a man called Noel Kerwin, who wasn't involved in organised crime. But because he was pictured at the Eddie Hutch funeral in the company of Jerry Hutch, people said he's in with the Hutches, and he was shot dead outside his house in Clondalkin as part of the Kinahan Hutch feud. So these funerals serve up this kind of circle of characters and serves up intelligence for both the criminal fraternity and the guards. And they can be dangerous occasions, and you have to cover them for all of these reasons.
Coming up, the pushback from Catholic priests officiating at gangland funerals.
This podcast is brought to you by AJ Products, creating a more friction-free office. Made in Sweden for the rest of the world. Visit ajproducts.ie to see how we can make your workplace work for you.
We talked before about the symbols of criminality and wealth that make their way into a church. And I suppose that does put the Catholic Church in a difficult situation. I mean, in 2019, the then Archbishop of Dublin, Diarmaid Martin, he ordered funerals for gangland criminals at Catholic churches in the capital to be toned down. He said, where it can be ascertained that individuals hold direct responsibility in this traffic of evil, they will no longer be allowed to exploit religious services in the Archdiocese of Dublin to enhance their image. No more show funerals, he said. That was 2019. That hasn't happened.
It hasn't really. I mean, that was, from memory, that was in the aftermath of a number of funerals where young men were shot dead in a kind of a localised gangland dispute in the Coolock stroke Artane area. One of those young lads was a guy called Zach Parker from Swords. He was a 23-year-old and he was shot in January of 2019. And then there was three other people then shot in quick succession. One of them was actually shot in the head in Darndale. He was only very young, in his early 20s, and he was shot in the head while wheeling his baby child in a buggy. So that was a particularly sad case. Funerals around that time, they were getting a bit, you know, livelier than they had been, if you like, a bit more showy. And Diarmaid Martin spoke out. Now, I could understand why he spoke out. I could never quite understand what power the Catholic Church had to enforce this. I mean, what you have to remember is that when a funeral takes place of even a person who's been very heavily involved in a crime gang, the priest is not dealing with the other people in the gang. The priest is dealing with the grieving sisters, the mother, father, wife, children of the dead man. And, like, these relatives are not involved in crime.
But priests sometimes speak out at these funerals, don't they, from the altar?
They do, and I always find this fascinating. And this is one of the reasons why I go to these funerals, because I want to hear what the family say, and I want to hear what the priests say. If we go back to earlier this year, a man called Tristan Sherry, was his funeral mass took place in the Finglas area in January. Now, Tristan Sherry was the man who burst into a restaurant in Blanchardstown on Christmas Eve last year and shot dead a man called Jason Hennessy Senior. Tristan Sherry was overpowered, and he himself was killed in the restaurant. And the priest at that funeral, you know, he just warned those present, you know, if you engage in this culture of an eye for an eye, that this is not going to lead anywhere. You know, you'll be blinded to the kind of sacredness of, you know, human life. And it was really an appeal to anybody present who may have felt inclined to take the law into their own hands, to stop and think. So that was one such intervention by a priest. But a much stronger one took place at a church in Ballyfermot. I was at a funeral back in July 2010. And this was the funeral of two brothers, Kenneth and Paul Corbally. Now, they were very heavily involved in organised crime, particularly drug dealing in the Ballyfermot area. And they were shot dead in a, I suppose, quite a spectacular and daring shooting. Somebody opened fire on their car as they were driving in it. So their funeral took place in Ballyfermot. And I was there, and during the church, or during the funeral service, Father Seamus Ryan, he didn't pull any punches. I mean, he just said that essentially the deaths of Kenneth and Paul Corbally were savage, but this was the end result for many people who got involved in the drugs trade. And he said that, you know, people should not be bent on settling scores. But he said that if people go down the road of big bucks to be made in the drugs trade, they can get involved in a round of tit-for-tat killings and they can end up dead. He kind of spoke at length about it. He was having a say. And while he was speaking, a woman got up from the congregation and walked up to the altar. She put her hand over the microphone and she said, and she, you know, said a few words to him, you know, i.e. urging him to stop. Mm. Now, even though she had her hand over the microphone, you could hear her saying that they weren't involved in drugs. But the priest had kind of set his piece at that stage. And I mean, they were involved in drugs. They were very heavily involved in drugs. Now, he apologised at the end if he'd caused any offence. But the interesting thing about priests speaking out like that is that if you look at the Ballyfermot area, most of the people in Ballyfermot, as is the case in any other area, are normal, decent, hardworking people. And they are sick of people like the Corbally who's gone around dealing drugs all over the place, dragging the younger generation of young teenagers and young men into gangland crime. And the priest's audience there, they want to hear people like prominent people with a platform, if you like, speaking out against gangs and against gang-related crime and the drugs trade. And even if we go on to the Eddie Hutch funeral. Now, Eddie Hutch was shot dead as part of the Kinahan-Hutch feud. He was a taxi driver. He was a brother of Jerry Hutch. And he was shot dead in February 2016 in direct revenge for David Byrne being shot at the Regency Hotel only a few days earlier. And at the funeral of Eddie Hutch, like, you really got a sense of, you can think of the Hutches as an organised crime group, and certainly there are people in the Hutch family who are involved in organised crime, but like, Eddie Hutch was a taxi driver. The taxi sign off his car was on top of his coffin. And I know men Eddie Hutch's age who are taxi drivers, and you think, God, that could be the guy that I know from down the pub. That could be his body in that coffin. And it really brings it home to you that these are ordinary working class Dublin people, and they're being gunned down by really a massive international cartel on the streets of Dublin. Now, obviously, the Kinahan Hutch feud is a complex thing and there's wrong on both sides and everything. But there's something about seeing a taxi sign on the top of a coffin getting carried into a church after a man in his late 50s has been shot dead.
Conor Lally, thanks very much.
Thanks, Bernice.
That's it for today. For more of Conor Lally's crime and security reporting, subscribe at irishtimes.com/subscribe. I'm Bernice Harrison. This episode was produced by Declan Conlon and Aideen Finnegan. In the news, we'll be back tomorrow.